Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hey, good morning.
Oh, hello.
How you doing? Good. Come on in. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, way up here on top of Burnaby Mountain. And we broadcast this show and all of CJSF's programming on the unceded ancestral territory of the Uncominamen Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. Today on the program, we will have some more election coverage. CJSF's Danny met with New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone. And I want to play this cool story from Frequency News from CICK in Smithers about hooligans, which are also known as candlefish, a big part of the local and traditional indigenous diet and lifeway, used for all sorts of things, including to make a kind of oil. So we'll hear that, and maybe we'll revisit a piece you've heard before, you might have heard before, if you're a regular listener. It'll depend on how we're doing for time, whether we get a little bit more election stuff or if we head in another direction. But as always, we will be starting with some local music. And if you are one of those frequent listeners, you will have heard this album, well, not quite in its entirety on this program, piece by piece, but we're working our way towards that because I love the new Devours record. I love Devours. I love Jeff. Great guy. Such a big part of Vancouver's independent music scene. And has released his newest record, Sports Car Era. And this is one of the early singles that has been out there for a while. It's called XY.
You
because you're more masculine than me. Tall, dark, and handsome, I chose you at random. It wasn't your personality. I refuse to worship you because you're more masculine than me. Tall, dark, and handsome, I chose you at random. It wasn't your personality. I refuse to worship you because you're more masculine than me. Tall, dark, and handsome, I chose you at random. It wasn't your personality. I refuse to worship you because you're more masculine than me. Tall, dark, and handsome, I chose you at random. It wasn't your personality.
In advance of Canada's April 28th federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of British Columbia's Lower Mainland. This series will give each a chance to share what they see as the most important issues for voters in their city, what they would like to see for members of Parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important for their constituents. I'm Danny Nesvedarani, and in this interview, I speak with the mayor of New Westminster, Patrick Johnstone. During the interview, he highlights housing, climate change, and public transit as key concerns for the city of New Westminster and Canada at large. He also questioned the three major federal political parties, the Liberals, Conservatives, and NDPs, insistence on tax cuts, asking where the money for infrastructure would come from if these cuts are enacted. In the email correspondence leading to our interview, Johnstone plainly stated that he had opinions. I first asked him to explain what that meant.
I do have opinions.
Yeah, would you want to expand on some of that?
Even since our email conversation, some of my opinions have been adapted because they are starting to talk about housing in a big way, especially the Liberals and Mark Carney have started talking about housing in a serious way. And I think housing is still, despite all of the other chaos around the world and everything else going on, housing is still our number one issue for local governments right now. And the housing crisis hasn't gone anywhere when everyone else has been talking about tariffs or talking about other things. It's still our number one issue, and I'm glad to see them finally doing some talking about it anyway.
So housing, would say, is one of the key issues in New Westminster specifically with this federal election coming up, something you hope is addressed?
Yeah, I think it's the key issue for all local governments, not just in British Columbia, but probably across the country if you ask them. A lot of other issues we're dealing with in our community, both issues, community issues, business issues, all go back to the fact that housing is hard for people to get, hard for people to feel secure in, hard for people to pay for. And it is limiting everything in our economic growth. It is causing people to live precariously, to not be comfortable, to not invest in their community, to not be secure in their lives. And there isn't enough housing. That's that what it comes right down to. And there isn't enough affordable housing. And with a lack of housing investment over the last 30 years, especially at the federal level, we're in a situation now where we as cities are in a place right now where the world economy isn't allowing the market to build housing enough to keep up. And the deficit of 30 years of affordable housing, non-market housing, is really coming to haunt us right now. So now we not only don't have enough market housing, we already have such a deficit of affordable housing that the entire housing spectrum is being challenged right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think in policy conversations like this, something that can be confusing for a lot of people is, you know, whether the federal government has full jurisdiction to solve these issues and the ways in which that municipal, provincial, and federal can kind of collaborate to address issues such as housing. How do you hope the federal government collaborates with local governments and sort of utilizes their jurisdiction in order to address housing?
Yeah, for a long time, I mean, this is part of our problem in housing is it is, we are the three Spider-Men pointing at each other. Local government blames the provincial government blames the federal government blames everybody else. We have our roles. And fundamentally, the federal government has, it's an easy thing to keep in mind. The federal government has the money, the provincial government has the regulation, the local government has the problem. So the feds used to invest a significant amount of money into housing. The federal government used to build 20,000 units a year of non-market housing. That was a policy from the end of World War II until the 90s, until the Martin budgets of the 1990s. And during that time, we did not have a housing crisis. We did not have chronic homelessness because we recognized there was a portion of the housing market that was not going to be fulfilled by the market. People were going to need homes that weren't going to be able to get into the market housing. And that was federal investment. It was also other things like federal incentives around taxation and incentives and things in order to get housing built. But fundamentally, it's about them making an investment, whether it's a direct investment by building or whether it's an investment by tax incentives and such to get housing built. The province has a responsibility of making sure that funding comes through and ends up at where it can get built. It also has some regulatory authority to allow us to build or not build, to force cities to build. As we've seen in the province in the last 2 years, this provincial government has shifted the regulations around how cities can and cannot prevent housing from being built. I think those are fundamentally really good moves. I think they're difficult moves for local government to deal with because it's making us do a lot of work to be compliant with new regulations. And it's a challenge right now when we're busy to be compliant. But I think in 20 years, we're going to look back at these moves as being fundamental and actually shifting the housing market and allowing more housing to get built and helping us address the housing crisis. It just, in the short term, it's a hassle. And local governments, we have to approve housing. We have to find ways to make sure that market housing is able to get built to fill the market, but we also have to get out of the way of the other forms of housing, be they non-market, be they social, be they supportive, be they transitional, the other forms, parts of the housing spectrum, and we have to stop putting barriers in the way of them getting built and have to be able to have to get them built in our communities.
Yeah, with this upcoming election coming up, you are speaking a lot on housing,
yeah.
But that definitely is not the only narrative surrounding this election, you know, one in particular being what's going on south of the border with the ongoing tariff situation that is ever-changing and in flux. How do you see Canada's current relations with the United States as influencing this upcoming federal election?
There is no doubt it's a disaster. It is the best way to think about it. It's a crisis. And it's a slow crisis. It's not a crisis. It's not a disastrous event that happened on one day and then we recover. It's something that's just going on for months and months. And economic uncertainty makes it difficult for government to predict how their policies are going to roll out. It makes it difficult for businesses to invest. It's difficult for anybody to make any rational choices when you don't know what the environment is going to be a week or 2 weeks from now. When you have a unreliable partner who is such a fundamental partner to our economy. But a disaster, there's two ways to respond to a disaster. I'm using the word disaster on purpose because there's two ways you respond to a disaster. One is to hunker down, hold off, don't do anything too crazy, let the shaking stop, and then start talking about how we rebuild. The other response is to take serious action. And I'm afraid that we're too much hunkering down, both provincially and federally, and not enough, okay, what do we do now? Recognize that this is not a problem that's going to go away in the next 6 months or next 2 years. And I've heard leaders at the provincial and federal levels say they have a vision for what we're going to do. I haven't seen what that vision is. And that is something that I think we need to hear more of in this conversation, this federal election, is... Yeah, you're going to react to this. What are you actually going to do? What are you going to change in the next year fundamentally change so that we're not susceptible to this again. Because I think the situation in the United States is not about one person. I don't think it's about the person who's president right now changing the rules as he goes along. I think the problem right now is he has exposed that the weaknesses in their system, the checks and balances that we used to think existed to keep that democracy healthy, he has demonstrated that they don't exist. And that if Donald Trump is removed in 4 years, we don't know whether the next person is going, how that next person is going to use that new power. And so I think that we need to fundamentally rethink our relationships around the world. We're entering a different era. And I've heard leaders at the federal level talk about that new era. I haven't heard about them talking seriously about what we're going to do to adapt to that new era.
What do you think they should be doing to adapt to that new era?
I don't know. I'm a mayor. I could throw out a bunch of things that I think that we could do. I think that, of course, we need to have a conversation about our relationship with Europe and talk about closer ties with Europe and to who, you know, to a reliable trading partner in that is in our geopolitical region, and think about how we make ties stronger with them and how we adapt perhaps parts of our economy and parts of our society to be more like what they've been successful at. I think that when we talk about military spending in order to support NATO and the need to bring our military spending up to 2% of GDP, I think there's a lot of things we could be spending our money on better than fighter jets. And I think that if we were able to adapt our military to more quickly respond to the threats that are facing us today, that are the existential threats that Canadians are facing today, because of climate change, if we were to make our military a rapid response force that can address floods and ice storms and fires and can act to protect the lives and safety of Canadians, they are the right type of force to do that. That is where we should put our military spending instead of fighter jets to fight foreign wars. I think a rethinking about how we invest in our infrastructure in this country and how we invest... how we invest in high-speed rail, how we invest in moving goods in our country, how we invest in housing. Like there are some really fundamental big changes we can make in how we make and how we do these things. And I see people talking about tinkering around the edges and hunkering down instead of talking about big fundamental changes. And maybe a disaster like this tells us that we need to make fundamental changes.
To bring it back to New Westminster, I know that you have a background in advocacy when it comes to environmental and transportation. And recently there was a protest in Metrotown in Burnaby regarding people against, you know, this ongoing deficit that TransLink is dealing with, I believe $600 million in operating costs. Yeah. And you attended that.
Yeah.
Is that something else that you would want the federal government to address as well, not just for New West, but just the Lower Mainland in general?
Yeah, I think the federal government has a role in public transit. I think their larger role is actually in making sure we have the infrastructure investments to deal with the capital costs. I may even disagree with some of the people in the mayor's caucus around this. I think the federal government could continue to provide that capital cost to help us. To help us expand the system. We have a system that has fundamentally not expanded in a decade while we have huge population growth over the last decade in this region. Our challenge at TransLink right now is not necessarily the capital cost, it's operational cost. We may open a new SkyTrain line in the Broadway corridor in 2 years and not have the money to operate a SkyTrain in it. We have a fundamental operational deficit, and the provincial government and the mayor's council have to work together on how we're going to fill that deficit. We need a new funding source. And that involves the dirtiest word that any politician could ever say, tax. We do need a new form of taxation in order to pay for the operation of our public transit system. We will not succeed as a region. Our regional growth strategy will not succeed. Our regional transportation strategy will not succeed. The province's Clean BC strategy will not succeed. None of our goals will succeed unless we have a reliable, well-funded, and safe public transit system. And right now, we don't have the tools to build that. So I'm feeling better than I did a couple of weeks ago at that protest around where the negotiations are going with the province around that. But fundamentally, we need a solution soon, because if we don't have a solution by the end of April, we are going to have to talk about transit cuts, and that's going to be that's not a road we can go down in this region. It's not a road that that students in this region can afford. It's not a route that working people in this region can afford. It's not something that any city can afford in this region. New Westminster is a very transit-dependent city. We use transit as much as any other city in the Lower Mainland. Residents of this city use this system, and to see it fail, to see it be eroded at a time of growth is just, it's unacceptable. So the province and the mayors have to step up and find a way to fund it, and we do need the federal government to continue to invest in the infrastructure side of it. All three leading parties are in a tax-cutting mode right now. And, it's at a time when we have deficits in housing, deficits in infrastructure. I'm not sure how we're going to pay to operate this country if we can't be honest with people that it costs money to run a country.
All right, well, that was all the questions I had. But if you have any other opinions that you would like to share at the end of this interview, what would they be?
Meanwhile, the climate crisis is going on. Meanwhile, people can't afford to buy insurance for their homes because the insurance industry recognizes the climate crisis is going on. All of the leading parties seem to be racing against each other to see who can do less about the climate crisis. And the crisis happening in the United States is an emergent crisis, and it's something that we have to deal with right now. But at the same time, and I've talked about the housing crisis, but overlying all of this right now is we are still in this climate crisis, and that climate crisis has killed people in my community. It is killing people across Canada. It is leading to worse affordability across Canada. It is an existential threat that, again, we are all afraid to address right now, and no one is talking about honestly. Where is the climate in this election? Where is it? Sorry, that's not a question for you. That's a question for all the folks running for election right now.
That was my interview with New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone, outlining what he sees as the top priority issues for New Westminster residents in the upcoming April 28th federal election. Stay tuned to CJSF 90.1 FM for more interviews in this series featuring mayors from other municipalities across the Lower Mainland. This piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find it on frequencynews.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
True.
Hypocrite by the Houseplants here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse. You just heard before the Houseplants, you heard Danny Nesvedarani's interview with New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone about the upcoming federal election, April 28th. There's a lot of that going on here on CJSF, and you can expect more of it as we move closer and closer to the federal election here on Speak Up and other talk programming. We'll definitely be focusing on that. Tomorrow's episode of Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, Suluau with Sista C is election-focused, and we've got more coverage planned to give you some more information and hopefully alternative, different coverage than you're getting from other media sources. And we appreciate you sticking around and listening to our version of things. Okay, now, as I mentioned, I'm going to share a fish story. That's right, from CICK via Frequency News, the local journalism initiative's online syndication branch, I guess we can call it. This story is from Dan Messick, and all the way up in Smithers, British Columbia. Very cool, interesting story that you will hear now.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, in the early spring on the Nass River, ulikan are running. This little oily fish, which is known as the candlefish, is also known as a life-saving fish because it was the first fresh food to arrive in the river after a long winter and has caused for much excitement in the Nass Valley. Camps are set up along the river as a base so Niska harvesters can set nets in the middle of the river and smoke and cook the ulikan, which renders its oils. Not long ago, that oil was more valuable than gold.